Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
With less than 5% of the population classified as obese, Japan stands out as a beacon of health in a world grappling with rising obesity rates. But how did they do it and what lessons could we learn? Well, I'm joined in the studio by Fiona Uema, who is founder of Fused, and Helen Hennigan, who's a consultant bariatric surgeon and professor of surgery at St. Vincent's Hospital. And it's good to have you with us. I might come to you first, Helen, because on the rates of obesity in Japan being really low, I mean, in your view and experience, and I know you've looked very closely at Japan, how much of that is down to culture and environment, and how much of it is down to just genetics?
Good morning, Claire and Fiona. It's multifactorial, Claire, and it's, you know, Japanese people, I actually did assume that they were genetically predisposed to a leaner body type. And actually, when I looked more into it over the last few days, I found that that's not necessarily true. You know, they're genetically as at risk of obesity as most people in the Western world. In fact, there have been really nice genetic studies done that have looked at heritability of various traits linked to obesity. You know, there are hundreds of genetic variants, but there's 17 strong, pretty strong ones. And Japanese people have the same susceptibility to those genetic variants as Europeans and people in the Western world. So it's largely due, I think, to environment and culture. Mm. And we see that as well when people of Japanese origin move to a Western world, their obesity rates will increase in a different westernized environment.
Right. Even though I would imagine at this stage in Japan, and Fiona will tell us about this as well, I'm sure they're exposed to elements at least of the Western diet, right?
Yeah, they do seem to be, but not to the same. I don't think it has taken hold to the same extent it has here or in other Western countries. So the fast food environment just hasn't taken hold in the same way that it has elsewhere.
Right. Well, Fiona, you lived there, so you're a good person to talk to about this. I mean, even though they are exposed to, you know, what we eat and to fast food culture, they clearly have more respect for food and what they're eating and think more about it, do they, than we do? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose I'm a case study of that. When I went to live in Japan, my waistline just naturally slimmed down. You know, it just happened. And I suppose I can tell you why. And it wasn't a conscious thing. And similarly, when my Japanese friends came to live in Ireland, they put on weight. So it's just from looking at that, it's
your,
not that they're
your evidence, right?
Evidence
there
of it. But, you know, it's really, it's not a magic bullet, one thing. It's the things that happen from when you wake up to when you go to bed that are integrated into the society and how you live there. And even as a foreigner going into their country. So, you know, if you look at their mindset to eating, harahachibu, 80% full. You never eat until you're completely stuffed. Portion control, the size of the portions they serve are smaller, so it's okay not to be absolutely full. It's okay to eat sweet things and have treats, but you might just have a mouthful. So you don't really deprive yourself of anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're eating healthy food, but it's really tasty. And it's the diversity of, I think people had used the term triangular eating, you know, the bento box. You always serve it with soup. So the soup is kind of giving you that sense of fullness.
So a light soup, like a miso soup.
Exactly. But then it's how exercise and movement is integrated so naturally into their society. So the walking and cycling to school is just a natural thing. It's safe for kids to walk and cycle to school, and parents will be along the way as checkpoints. It just happens naturally in towns and villages. So you would very, it's not really normal to see people in cars going to school.
Right. We were talking about the hot school meals here with the minister a little earlier. So that culture around food, it starts at that stage, does it? Clearly in the home, but in education as well.
Exactly. So the whole country supports a healthy system, the government, the schools, the companies. So I worked in a school for 2 years, and it was just so nice to experience that, how passion for food and education is instilled into the education system. And, you know, I have a 10-year-old, and his biggest thing is there's not a dedicated time really for eating. It's quite rushed, and they feel like if they take extra time eating, they suffer on their playtime. But, you know, and that's kind of not, I suppose, a positive thing. In Japan, you have that designated time to eat in the school. And obviously they have a healthy school lunch with a nutritionist inside the school. But it's education on food, the seasonality of food, how to read food labels. That's just all in the school curriculum.
And is the food supplied by the school, or how does it work?
So the food is made in the school. They have staff to make the food in the school. They have a full-time nutritionist. But the thing that stood out to me is the kids are part of the rota system. The meal just doesn't land there for them. They have to help set it up, prepare the Toronto little apron. So they take turns doing that. So I think it's that sense of building an appetite and appreciating the meal too. And I think that they have a leftover chart and they all get excited about it. How much leftover food did we have? How can we reduce it? So they're all invested in it.
So that's a very different attitude, Helen. Yeah. I'm sure you would agree to what we see here.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's a lot that actually they legislate for in Japan as well, Claire, which shows that, you know, this doesn't happen by accident. Mm-hmm. So like Fiona's alluded to some of the things they do in school, like it's mandatory that there is one of the teachers has a nutrition qualification. So at least 3 years of training in nutrition. The principal is also involved in, I believe, and I haven't lived or travelled there yet, but that, you know, principal's involved in the procurement of food, really healthy food as well for the school. But separately, even from an employer's perspective, really, you know, we find this controversial. It wasn't at all in Japan, but in 2008, they introduced a law called the Metabo Law. And it was a law concerning the promotion of health and prevention of metabolic disease in the population. The one thing about Japanese or people who live in Japan or of Japanese heritage and people generally in Southeast Asia, if they do gain weight, it can make them really unwell from a metabolic health point of view. They're more at risk of metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes. So they have to work really hard to avoid, you know, an unhealthy population. So the Metabo Law introduced in 2008 to combat obesity required employers and local governments to measure the waistlines of employees and all residents over the age of 40.
No, we'd be horrified. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if we did that here?
And there, I believe Japanese people can't understand our reaction to that. They're, you know, whether, I don't know if Fiona could corroborate this, a more compliant society or just do what's right for themselves individually, but also collectively and societally. And, you know, when individuals don't get fined or penalised if their waistline is increasing on an annual basis, but if a number of employees, if a certain percentage in an environment are over the threshold, which isn't much, it's 35 inches for women and 33.5 inches for men, then there are certain kind of penalties. But more importantly as well, if people's waistlines are increasing, they are supported. You know, they're given various different supports, both from a dietary point of view, from an education point of view, and from a motivational point of view, directly and in groups.
Fiona, we might get your perspective on that. I mean, I mentioned how horrified we would be if that, you know, was introduced here. But are you aware that it's very accepted in Japan?
Yeah, like there's a thing called Taiso in Japan. So in a Japanese company, I was really embarrassed when we first had to do it. You do 5 minutes exercise. That's how you start the day. It comes on the speakers and everyone stands up in their suits and starts moving and jumping up and down. And I remember when I first had to do it, I was absolutely mortified, but it's so normal for them. So, but yeah, they talk about obesity in a very honest and open way that we wouldn't in Ireland. I suppose they're very factual about it. You know, if you're carrying weight, you're not healthy, or you're more susceptible to certain diseases. So they talk very factually about it. They don't mean to be offensive. It's not offensive for them, but we may perceive it that way here. So it's probably a cultural thing as well. So they're just very mindful of their health and their activities throughout the day.
So the measuring of the waist, they would see that as something that is there to help them maintain their
health. Absolutely,
And accept it for that reason.
And thankful for it, I think, because then they would see they'd have more longevity, they'd be healthier into their older age, you know. So, yeah, they don't see it as a negative, more as an investment in their health.
Helen, that other point that Fiona mentioned earlier about only eating until you're 80% full. Can you see the value in that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, when someone the way we eat in Ireland is, you know, which is, and in, again, Western worlds where you eat till your plate's full or the plate's empty, you never leave food behind. We've overeaten at that point. So there is good the physiology behind, you know, when you're 80% full, it takes about 15 to 20 minutes for your gut to send signals to your brain that you are full. So eating till you're 80%, you know, gives your brain body time for that, for the gut and brain communication to happen, for the cascade of signals from the digestive tract to reach the brain, because like I said, by the time you're 80% full, you've probably had more than enough already. Mm-hmm. You know, and it just, I think the pace at which people eat in Japan is very different to here, and it's, your food is more celebrated, it's you know, than you're rushed or that we do. So
eating, Fiona, am I right, isn't such a social occasion in Japan, is that fair to say? Like, they're not going to spend hours around a dining table.
Yeah, I suppose not exactly. I suppose compared to the Italians, if you think of it like that.
Yeah.
But they would still eat quite mindfully. I suppose by nature, they use chopsticks. You're going to eat a bit slower anyway. But if you think of even when they socialise and drink alcohol, they'll always eat food when they're drinking. They would never just drink.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of more, it's coming into Ireland now, that kind of tapas and drinking, which is obviously healthier as well. But social in the sense that, you know, they enjoy conversation, but it wouldn't be a very long meal because unless it's a formal tasting menu, it is like a bento. So you're eating everything at once, really.
Right. And it's not going to be a huge meal either because for the reasons we've just been talking about, right?
Well, exactly. But, you know, I think a big thing that stood out to me in Japan is they have busy lives like us. You know, they're working long hours. And how can they still be healthy? It's the availability of healthy food. You know, if you look at the convenience stores, I was just telling the story when I went to Japan on a trip with my kids. I arrived 11 p.m. to the hotel and I had to go out and get food. There was a convenience store with lots of healthy options, you know, so you didn't have to get
you're not buying
plate
crisps.
Of chips. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just easier when you're busy to be healthy.
Yes.
And that makes a massive difference.
All right. Well, perhaps there are lessons. I'm sure, Helen, you would agree there are very many lessons we could take from all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Across, you know, and not just individually, but I think societally, I think government has a huge role to play in helping us create that environment, both from a food point of view, but also from an activity point of view, and just to create an active living environment. I think there's a lot we can learn from Japan.
Well, listen, thank you both for joining us. Helen Hennigan, who's a consultant bariatric surgeon, and Fiona Uyema, who is founder of the company Fused. We'll take a break before the news.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.